Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number 2, live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. My apologies for maybe guaranteeing an extra segment of work for our guy, James Young, JY, but we appreciate his coaching scouting report on this Tuesday morning, the day of game number 1, the opening game of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight in Boston. We will preview game 1 in Beantown in just a moment. We'll look big picture at the NBA and what is to come next season for some of the teams that were just eliminated later in this second hour. And we go back to Louisville one final time with our guy Keith Stewart and look forward to another signature event, or at least it will have Scottie Scheffler in the field this week at Colonial, one of the long-standing tracks on the PGA Tour in Dallas, Texas at the Charles Schwab Challenge. All of that DRS in this second hour. We still got 2 to go up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
Yep, we got you covered here. And also, just scrolling through the Twitter machine right here, sometimes I like to see some topics that I sort of bit on last week, and that was the New York Giants' horrendous new uniforms they're trying to pick out for Century Red or whatever the heck they're calling it. But here's what I love about players. You go ask the players, because what I mean by that is when you're lining up to play a football game, more important sometimes in the football game is how good you look while you play in that football game. So they asked Malik Nabers, it said, you know what, do you like the new throwback uniforms? And his quote exactly was, it's going to be hard to swag it out. That's all I got to say about it. I mean, this guy, it looks like he might be a superstar because his head is on correctly here. You look at uniforms and you immediately go to how can you accessorize that uniform? So I'm a big fan of Malik Nabers here, and he is totally right. That's a terrible uniform. No swag in that thing, Al.
So we appreciate the honesty from Malik Nabers.
Yeah.
You saw that as we were coming back from commercial break, would be my guest. When did you decide that you were going to bring that up on a national television show that had nothing to do with the Giants uniform release from last week?
Because we're just previewing hour number 2, things we see, you know, scrolling through. We got to keep the people updated on the information immediately. Now, whether it's Scottie Scheffler getting arrested or a prominent young wide receiver saying this uniform stinks, which is always a take I agree with, we're going to put that out there for the people. So that's
right. Scottie Scheffler, the world number 1 golfer, getting arrested an hour and a half before his second round tee time at a major championship. The same as Malik Nabers talking about a uniform retro that was released by the New York Giants for a football season multiple months away. Anyway, DRS, we appreciate it. But now, again, I made a mistake and said that JY was going to be here for the start of this second hour. So I'll own up to that. I will take the responsibility. I don't know why I thought that was going to be the case, why we would even need JY for a further game preview and a deeper dive into game number 1 of the ECF. That's the Eastern Conference Finals tonight inside TD Garden. When you have the 2 premier NBA handicappers on this network live with you to start off this second hour, that's Donnie. I'm Ben. Game number 1 tonight in Boston. The Celtics book now as a double-digit favorite. The C's lay in 10 points. It's the updated number on the FanDuel Sportsbook. It was 9.5 yesterday after Indiana victorious in Game 7 inside Madison Square Garden. From that garden to the other garden, this one in Boston inside TD Garden. The total tonight, 221.5. I do not think this will be as easy for Boston as the games were, especially to start against Miami and or Cleveland. But yet it remains a double-digit spread. So the question is kind of the same, Donnie. The Celtics expected a win, but can the Celtics cover?
You know, I take a pause on that because we're used to not seeing this, Ben. It's the Eastern Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals. Like, double digits are going to be the norm in this. Double digits game one, no matter what the score, just depending on injury situation, we're going to have double digits again in game number two. Then we're going to flip it back to Indiana, and what is it going to be? 6-5 as a favorite towards, you know, the Boston Celtics, which is crazy, which expecting we might have a quick series. But having said that, I like this series from a score points perspective. You take a look at that 221.5. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, as we talked about with JY earlier, you know, some of those games, and again, it's hard to make the regular season into the postseason, but we did see some points between these two teams, and rightfully so, because Indiana doesn't play any defense. So if you're licking your chops right now, Tatum and Jaylen Brown props, you rightfully should be. They should be able to score at will as long as they're knocking down their open shots. You take a look at Tatum at 29.5 as a points prop, Jaylen Brown 25.5 as a points prop in this game. I do think Jason Tatum is going to probably shoot at least 20 times, which he should get to 30 points. The question is going to be, where's the return fire from Indiana? So in a game one scenario where I'm trying to hunt some of these player props down, you look at that 221.5. I think he gets over that number. And maybe just to be safe in that, because we understand it was a hard fought series for Indiana, gets the victory in game seven in the Garden, that he got to flip over and play Boston in Boston, that maybe just a team total over for the Boston Celtics would make some sense. I expect Boston to really get after. We're just waiting to see what we have out of Indiana. Is this a game where they are fired up after their game seven? Or do they decompress for a game and say, whoo, made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, haven't been here in a while, get hammered in game number one and say, okay, now let's get back to business in game number two?
115.5 is that team total for the Celtics tonight. Indiana is not great defensively. I would expect Boston to at least flirt with that number. When you think of totals for the Pacers, they live up to their name. They play with pace. They want to get out offensively. They went over in game six and in game seven, over in four of the seven against New York, over in all four victories in those six games in their opening round set against Milwaukee. Boston has been booked as at least a 13-point favorite in every single home game, all six of them that we have seen for the Seas here in this playoff run inside TD Garden. At least a 13-point favorite, and they have gone over in four of the six games at home. Boston, Donnie, to your point, has been booked as a 7.5-point favorite in all 10 postseason games. They have won 8 of those 10, 7 of the 8 by at least 13 points, 6 of the 8 they have covered as a hefty favorite, nearly double digits in all of those covers. So yes, to see Boston as a 10-point favorite, even for what we expect to be a lopsided Eastern Conference Finals, should be jarring, because it is the Eastern Conference Finals, and these are the only two teams remaining out of 15 in the Eastern Conference in the association, but the numbers do back it up. And if we are going to flirt with a total of 221 and a hook tonight inside TD Garden, if we are going to push to the over of that, it opens up the prop categories. We focus first on Boston. Jason Tatum, who had not gone over 29.5 until the final two games, or games 3 and 4 of their second round series against Cleveland, has the highest points prop tonight, 29 and a hook. Jaylen Brown, 25.5. Derek White at 16 and a hook. If he is hitting from three, 16.5 points in great danger. But what we know, Donnie, no Kristaps Porzingis for the opening two games of this series, at least in Boston, as we await the return of KP for the Seas.
Yeah, and also, until we don't know what Porzingis is going to get back and how it's going to change the equation of the starting lineup scoring-wise, but the one thing that we do know, do you know who plays a lot more minutes with Kristaps Porzingis not on the court? That's Al Horford. We've seen him shoot a lot of three-point shots in that previous series because he is basically the guy they're going to leave open from three-point land. You're not going to cover him because you have other options. I believe he made 6 three-point shots in the last game that Boston played, and I think he took double-digit three-point shots in that. So you take a look at that 9.5, you could just turn that into a three-point prop at that point. Here. He should be able to get his looks. The only question is, when everybody can score on Indiana, how many looks is Horford actually going to get? Because if Tatum goes, every time I got the basketball, like, I got an easy lane. Same thing with Brown. I don't know how that's going to translate. So that's one thing to watch for me in game number one is Horford. But better use Al Horford while you get a chance, because as I said, he plays, 35, even sometimes close to 40 minutes in games just because Porzingis isn't there. That's going to be slashed in half once he comes back. So maybe take a look at Al Horford early on in the series and say, you know what? I'm going to play a lot in games one and two. I better get my shots in here.
Now to Indiana quickly. We'll have further thoughts on this game later on in our third hour. Pascal Siakam has the highest points prop at 20.5. He's had 20-plus in three straight for the Pacers. Now to the world of golf. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Two straight segments with Keith Stewart. Live right here on this Tuesday on the early line on SportsGrid to look back at the second major championship in this season in the world of golf at the 2024 PGA Championship in a wild weekend in Louisville, Kentucky. And we look forward at the Charles Schwab Challenge this week at Colonial, one of the historic stops on the PGA Tour in Dallas, Texas. Keith, thank you for joining us here live on this Tuesday on the early line. Last time you were on TEL, it was Friday morning ahead of round number two at Valhalla Golf Club, live from Valhalla, to try to tell us what was happening with the situation on the scene following the arrest of Scottie Scheffler. A little bit calmer on this Tuesday, I would imagine.
I tell you, I've been to going to golf events for many, many years and covering them live, and I have never witnessed anything in a media center much like what was happening on Friday. The anxiousness, the storylines, the rumors, everything, the electricity of that room and that of the atmosphere and the vibe on the golf course with Scotty going around and the chance for him, free Scotty. It was pretty amazing stuff and some unbelievable theater, no doubt.
It was a wild weekend, to say the least, at Valhalla. But as we focus on the golf in the final round, it was Xander Schauffele prevailing over a field where everybody was going low in Louisville. Xander Schauffele, Keith, has had a world of talent for as long as he has been on the PGA Tour. A gold medal winner in Olympic golf, but that major title had eluded him in any of the four majors, finishing top 10 in each of the four entering this week at the 2024 PGA Championship. But when all was said and done, a birdie putt on his 72nd hole of the week goes around but then down as Xander Schauffele is a major champion for the first time. How did he change the narrative around his game to ultimately end up the champion of the PGA Championship at Valhalla?
Going into Valhalla, I was giving Xander zero credit, and I walk away giving him all the credit in the world. Listening to his post-round or, you know, post-tournament press conference on Sunday, he still remained so composed. And obviously, he was very emotional at that moment and very relieved that he finally got over that hurdle in his career. But here's a guy with all the controversy that's been swirling around golf and how much of a beating he takes from the media week after week after week and not being able to close for the last 2 years. I mean, his last win was July of 2022. For him to do it in such heroic fashion, knowing he needed a birdie on the last hole, having to take that baseball swing stance, getting the ball up there, and then getting up and down. I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a major end on the final putt. I mean, it's been over 2 years. So for Valhalla, the PGA of America, and Xander to all close in such fashion, it was just unbelievable theater. And, I can't say enough good things about Xander in this moment.
It was fantastic to watch in real time as well. You take a look at starting the back nine, where maybe the easiest hole in the golf course, a par five, he bogeys that and loses the lead, then still able to gain his composure back. And also, Keith, to your point, sometimes moving forward, he could have won this, let's just say, by five strokes. Walking up 18, it feels great. I love the fact that he's been known to not be able to close the door, but needed the birdie on 18 to secure that victory with a clutch putt that rolled around. I think that helps him out in the future. But as we take a look at the future of golf, maybe it is Scottie Scheffler, who shot 67 round number one, 66 after being arrested, and maybe the adrenaline sort of got away with him on Saturday, but Sunday, right back in the form at a 65. It's almost a shame, because if he would have had a very good round, at least a decent round, in round number three, who knows what we would have saw on Sunday. Talk to us about Scottie Scheffler, how he encapsulated this entire week at the PGA and still able to perform and get a top 10.
Well, I tell you what, it is a great microcosm for all that's going on in golf. I mean, all the disruption that we've faced for the last 2 years was kind of the way Scotty led his week. I mean, here's a guy who is by far the best player in the world, and he showed it. And maybe Ted Scott has tons of job security, because part of the storyline was that his caddy had to leave on Saturday and he had permission ahead of time. And it was known, well known in Scotty's camp, that Ted was going to his daughter's high school graduation. But boy, did he need help on Saturday keeping it all together after that adrenaline rush, like completely, you know, challenged him after the big dump on Friday night, you know, and he was just like, oh, geez, you know, like what just happened to me? And then he comes back Saturday needing to compete again. He probably really needed Ted Scott on his bag. But overall, I mean, this is just a sign of the times in golf. This guy is an amazing talent. And at the end of the day, we had roughly, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 policemen on a Friday morning that couldn't recognize him and put him in a cop car and sent him to jail. I mean, what are we doing? Like that's unbelievable to me. It kind of just shows to me that, like, all the stuff that we've been dealing with in golf, the talent is still there. And we need to celebrate the golfers more. You know, everyone's being critical of, oh, the way the golf – Xander was 21 under. How about that Xander shot 21 under? How about that Bryson birdied the last hole to force a, you know, playoff? How about Victor Hovland and Colin Morikawa, these young stars coming back? I mean, how about all of these different storylines that are so positive, and yet we don't even know who the number one golfer in the world is in Louisville? I mean, like, this just blows my mind. I mean, there are so many positives in the golf world, of which I've been a part of forever. I mean, Bryson walked around that place like Arnold Palmer. I mean, he was the people's champion. It was so cool, and yet we can't come together. I mean, at the end of the day, the best way I can answer your question, Donnie, is to say that Scottie Scheffler is without a doubt the best golfer in the world. He showed that this weekend. But there's a lot of other guys out there that are working really hard to try to catch him. And we're going to have some unbelievable theater this year when they come together.
It was an absolutely star-studded and stacked leaderboard in the final nine of a final round of a major championship. Bryson pushing Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland making a charge, Colin Morikawa finally recording a birdie on his 72nd hole, his 18th of Sunday. So quickly here, Keith, a quick early look at the next major championship on the docket in about a month, in the middle of June in North Carolina. Pinehurst number 2 for the 2024 U.S. Open. I think the theater that we saw on Sunday sets the stage for the U.S. Open. What say you?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. These guys have now officially understood that these four events have, if they thought they were a big deal going in, they're 10x that now. And the golf world can't wait for it enough. I mean, the anticipation, the crowds on Sunday. I walked with Victor and Bryson. Unbelievable. I can't wait to talk and get into Colonial even next week. It'll be good.
We're talking Colonial next. You're on the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So right after another major championship in golf, a stacked event this week on the PGA Tour, one of the historic stops every single season, we go to Colonial in Dallas for the Charles Schwab Challenge. Keith Stewart joins us for a second consecutive segment to look at a new week on the PGA Tour. And Keith, back in Dallas, Scottie Scheffler returns home to his newborn and his wife after a tumultuous week in Louisville. But as we shared, a very strong final round that reminds why Scottie Scheffler is the best golfer on planet Earth at this moment. And then you see the odds for the Charles Schwab Challenge, where Scottie Scheffler is plus 260 and everybody else is 12-1 or greater than that. So, Keith, I ask you first, how do you expect Scottie Scheffler to perform after the week at Valhalla back near his home?
Scottie Scheffler likes to win. And the only reason he didn't win last week was because he was processed. I mean, at the end of the day, he would have definitely won that tournament. And everyone on property feels the same way. And even Xander would say, hey, the door was open. There was an opportunity because of all the controversy that was circling around him. And I was able to get through and win and beat Bryson. I mean, all of those guys were thankful for that. I mean, just look at this odds board. Look how long all the other odds are versus Scottie. Scottie, this place, they've come here for, 77 years, but in the 78th, they've done a complete transformation to this golf course. Gil Hance, the architect, who did Southern Hills. He did the Country Club, a couple of majors over the last few years. He has restored this place back to the days of Ben Hogan. And in doing so, he's only made it easier for Scottie Scheffler to win. He's put more of an emphasis on approach. The second thing is that you're going to need a new game plan. You know, these guys that have been coming here for 4, 5, 7 years, whoever in the field, this is going to be a new setting for them. They have to figure out the layout, what changes have been made. And of course, you know, I mean, Gil Hanse, he restored the golf course and he made it shorter. Guys, I mean, how many times do we hear that, right? So obviously this is going to be a thinking man's opportunity, of which Scotty is the best in the field at. And scoring wise, it's not the longest golf course in the world. Scotty's the best scorer, short game wise, and not necessarily always with the putter. But boy, he is some cerebral golfer. And if we're making this a challenge about adaptability and approach, then, I mean, Scheffler's odds are actually very accurate.
It's pretty crazy. He's a plus 260 to win this week, which is incredible when you think about Morikawa at a 12-1 price, Spieth at a 20-1. We haven't seen these type of numbers in a long, long time. But tell us a little bit about that golf course and how it plays out. And also, Keith, are there any chances down the line for some longer shots to try to win this, knowing, as what you just said, it's not the same golf course that we're used to seeing over the past couple of years?
Well, Donnie, if we go back, let's say a decade, you know, the average winner's odds is somewhere in the plus 4,000 range. So we have seen some longer shots. I mean, just a year ago, we had Emiliano Grillo win, and he was triple digits. So it can definitely happen here. And it has a lot to do with the fact that the skill set that is needed is such on the PGA Tour that a lot of guys have it, right? Almost the majority of the approach shots, roughly 45% of the approach shots, are going to be coming in from that 125 to 175 range. Well, you're not on the tour if you're not very good in that range, right? A lot of accuracy off the tee. Length isn't as needed as it was a week ago. So this really kind of fits in the wheelhouse of a lot of the guys that, you know, I'm favoring as early leans, because they are just absolutely excellent approach players. And when they get the ball on the green, they can score and capitalize on those birdie chances.
So here it is, the early leans on the early line. Keith, who are some golfers that you're looking at this week at Colonial?
Right there in the middle of the board, I see tremendous value. The first one's Tom Hoagie. I am ready for a Hoagie sandwich this week down there in Fort Worth. I mean, this guy is he is a top three approach player on tour, and we're including Scotty in that conversation and Xander in that conversation. This guy just leads the field in radar and accuracy. When you're talking about hitting his 8-iron, his 9-iron, his wedge, he's excellent. He's proven it before at Pebble Beach, which is another positional golf course. The second guy, Taylor Moore. 12th last week at Valhalla. Great short game, great iron player, plus 6,600. This guy won at the Valspar, which is another great comp for here. Get the ball and play off the tee, and then attack, attack, attack with that iron play.
Keith, did you know that Donnie Wrightside used to own a chain of Hoagie shops in South Jersey?
I did not, but you know what? If I were him, I would be investing in more sandwiches this week in Fort Worth. There's no doubt about that.
No mayo on that hoagie. Remember that.
No mayo. No mayo. Keith, never forget that. No mayo on the hoagie, only a Tom, and maybe a winner this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge. Keith Stewart, we appreciate the time on this Tuesday morning on the Early Line. Thanks for being here for two segments. Around the W, we go up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Yes, we cover basketball around these parts. Usually it's NCAA action. Typically it's the NBA in the playoffs. But boy, we got to focus. We got to get right here for the WNBA season, which takes place all summer long. And quite frankly, has been some very good betting markets so far. It's Donnie Wrightside, Ben Stephens, yeah. The two foremost handicappers on this network, which now includes and features WNBA action, which last night saw the Sun on the road improve to 3-0. With an 88-84 victory over the Fever, who dropped to 0-4. Caitlin Clark getting better with each performance. Pops was in the stands yesterday, not happy with the loss. But we're getting closer and closer, it seems like, to that Fever's first win here, Ben.
Listen, Indiana is starting to figure some things out. We'll talk about the Fever in just a moment and make the point that we shared just a week ago with all the hype and optimism around Caitlin Clark's WNBA debut, the start of this W season, just a week old, and what the outlook is for Indiana. But we go to Connecticut, who the Fever have played twice. They've also played the Liberty twice. New York made the WNBA Finals, coming up short against the Aces. Connecticut was the only other team to win more than 25 games last year. That was the Sun. It has been a grueling start to this season for Indiana. Home and home virtually versus Connecticut and New York. So, yes, being 0-4 does not look great from the win-loss perspective, but it does explain the start to this year. And the Sun are going to be back to that pantheon of which we saw them at last year, especially if Alyssa Thomas and DaWanna Bonner continue to play the way they are right now. Bonner, 22 points last night, a clutch go-ahead bucket late. That was the game-winning shot for Connecticut. And Alyssa Thomas is the do-it-all each and every game. One assist shy of her second triple-double of this season already, both coming perhaps against Indiana. But again, only 9 dimes last night. Did finish with a game-high 24 points and 14 rebounds, playing 40 minutes for the Sun last night. Connecticut is very, very good. But they were a 6-point favorite on the road in Indiana. The Fever cover that number. A total of 163.5 does go over because the Fever are starting to find their footing. And that is also a storyline here for Indiana DRS. They have now covered in 2 straight games against New York and Connecticut, despite dropping their first 4 to start this year. It was going to take some time in Indianapolis, but the Fever are starting to round into form ever so slightly.
Yeah, by the way, take a look at the game yesterday. And typical, you know me, Ben, I love a good box score. 40% on the road shooting for the Connecticut Sun. The Indiana Fever at home, 48%. 3-point shooting on the road for the Sun, 21%. At home for the Fever, 30%. Free throw shooting, 80% on one side, 92% on the other side. But again, 24 of 30 for 80%, much better than 12 of 13 for 92.2%. But the focus, as always, is going to be on Caitlin Clark. 27 minutes played, 5 of 11 from the field, which included 3 of 7 from three-point land, 3 boards, 5 assists, and 5 turnovers, and minus 18 in that game, and 17 total points. So as we look at her seasonal averages here, 17, 5.5, 4, but averaging 6.5 turnovers per game, that's going to have to get a little bit lower. But I do think if you're watching the game-by-game process for both her and also her team, you could see it starting to come together. There's no more butterflies out there. Ooh, this is my first professional game going up against quality basketball teams. I believe those numbers will get even more efficient as we go, and also the wins will start to come for the Fever. In your opinion, looking at Caitlin Clark, and again, it's a short sample size, from game 1 to game 4, what have we seen in your eyes, Ben?
We have seen Caitlin Clark start to play more like Caitlin Clark in her ability in this Indiana offense to orchestrate things. There have been some confusion, I think, that has led to some of these turnovers. We saw it on display last night. I even tweeted it out. Part of the bread and butter of what Caitlin Clark does better than anybody else in women's basketball, at least at the collegiate level, is lead in transition. And the bigs at Iowa would get out and run, understanding how their point guard likes to play. There has been that adjustment period now for the Fever, leading to some of those turnovers. Her role in this offense starting to pick up as well. We got a report from ESPN's Holly Rowe, who was the sideline reporter last night in Indy, saying that she spoke to Caitlin prior to this game last night against the Sun. And Caitlin said in the first few games of her WNBA career, she was feeling things out. She wanted to be respectful of her teammates who had been in that franchise and the organization for longer. Ahead of game number 3 against New York in Brooklyn on Saturday, she just started to play like herself again, and you see those results. Only 27 minutes last night because of an injury to her ankle that she suffered late in the opening half. Of course, she did return, but 17 points, hit 3 threes. She is going to continue to fire from deep. And Donnie, I said this about Indiana overall. Caitlin Clark will be fine. The Fever will be fine. They have started their season, all 4 games, against the second and third best teams in the WNBA a season ago. Indiana entering this year, 7 consecutive seasons of a losing record. Only twice in that 7-season span had the Fever even won double-digit regular season games. So the expectation that they're a surefire 20-win team in this 40-game WNBA season, or they are going to be one of the top 8 to make the playoffs, large and lofty expectations for a team in Indy that has not seen that level of success in a very long time. Once the Fever's schedule starts to slow down ever so slightly, that's when we'll get a true picture of what Indiana and Caitlin Clark are able to accomplish this season.
We had a doubleheader last night in the WNBA. Second game of that doubleheader was the Storm and the Liberty. The Liberty improved to 4-0 in a lower scoring tilt, 74-63 over the Storm, who dropped them to 1-3. Brandon Stewart in that game, 16 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists. The Liberty looks like they're back on course here for yet a possible run at a WNBA championship.
Yeah, Sabrina Ionescu, great last night as well, 20 points and 8 dimes. And Jonquel Jones has been a revelation, one of the key additions to this New York team that really highlights what they can do in the front court alongside Stewie. She is the vet, 28 minutes last night, 16 points and 8 rebounds as well. So the Liberty off to a perfect 4-0 start, but they were a 13-point favorite, did not cover. Total of 166 stays well under. New York hasn't covered in three of their first four games yet, despite the perfect 4-0 start. The Libs are going to be just fine. I think the story actually, Donnie, is with the Storm. Seattle has the third best price to win the WNBA championship, well behind both the Aces and the Liberty at this moment. But Seattle was supposed to be a team that really elevated its game this offseason. Not only the NBA's leading scorer in Jewel Lloyd, but they add Skylar Diggins-Smith and Nneka Agumake. It's been a slow start for Seattle, and their lottery draft pick in Nika Mule, an outstanding defender from Connecticut, due to visa issues, hasn't played just yet, or maybe last night was her debut for Seattle. No, she was not in the lineup last night. So a slow start for Seattle to figure things out, which leads the RS to the WNBA title odds, where it's still the Aces and the Liberty. Las Vegas off to a perfect start, 60 cents in front of New York. Really, for me, there's that tier of two, but I think it's Las Vegas and everybody else, New York even behind, as you start to look at those WNBA championship odds. And I would still put Connecticut in front of Seattle. The Sun look great. Alyssa Thomas playing at an elite level, and DeWanna Bonner continues to score. I put Connecticut in front of Seattle.
And by the way, take a look at the MVP odds. We used to see in the top three there Caitlin Clark at around an 11-1 or so price. Now we see Wilson, Thomas, and Stewart as the new top three. Look, it was always protecting themselves through the sports books a la Tiger Woods in a PGA championship where people are always going to bet that point. But now we're seeing the superstars rise to the occasion. Wilson at a minus 110 price after just a few games into the season. That's pretty incredible.
Absolutely so. And Asia Wilson was the rightful WNBA MVP favorite, as we shared, by the way, the Las Vegas Aces. And Asia Wilson, a 14.5-point home favorite tonight against the Phoenix Mercury with a total of 173.5. Difficult place to play and win, DRS, to walk out with a victory if you're the road team inside the Michelob Ultra Arena on the Strip in Sin City. We'll have plenty more here on the early line on this Tuesday. Coming up next, we'll talk about some teams and their outlook for next year in the association, in the NBA, on the other side of the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the early line on this Tuesday on Sports Grid, we have game number one of the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals tonight in Boston between the Celtics and the Pacers. Game one of the Western Conference Finals tomorrow night in the Twin Cities between the Timberwolves and the Mavericks. But there's only four teams of the 30 clubs around the association still left standing, so it's never too early to look at NBA fans' maybe favorite time of year. That would be the summer and the offseason. And Donnie, although the year has come to a close for the Oklahoma City Thunder, what an optimistic season it was in OKC, a team that outpaced the Denver Nuggets to earn the number one seed in the Western Conference with the NBA Coach of the Year in Mark Daigneault and, of course, a star in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a first-team NBA All-Rookie performer in Chet Holmgren. But entering this year, OKC did not have one of the shortest prices to win the Western Conference. It was 29-1. So now we take a guess on guess the line of what the price is going to be entering next year. If you had to estimate what that number looks like for the Thunder entering next season to win the West, what do you think it is?
It's got to be one of the favorites up there. So if we're taking a look at 29-1, because it's always hard to say when the team is actually going to want to start to get good. And the reason I say that is OKC has had some pretty good pieces together, but it's apparent they were holding them back to get better draft picks and say, we're not ready to maximize our talent. Now you're in a position for OKC after this year, you're going to maximize your talent. It's no longer about draft picks you have a ton of. It's no longer about having a young basketball team. You are extremely young. You take a look at that starting lineup. SGA, Isaiah Joe, Dort Williams, and Holmgren. That is a great baseboard of young players to build off of. Now, the question is going to be, how do you spend some of those draft picks in the future to bring in that veteran talent to get you over the hump? Yeah. And what I mean by getting over the hump is making that long run now in the playoffs. They already got the number one seed. They show you they are a very good NBA team in the regular season. Now just need a little bit more of that help. So if we're guessing what the odds would be, 29-1 last year, I mean, to be honest, what are we looking at next year? 6-1? 7-1 at a long shot? Yeah. Maybe even less than that, Ben.
I can't wait to see what those odds look like, because the story, as we have said many times on this show, entering a new NBA season in 23-24 was the idea of the Big Four, the two teams from the Eastern Conference, favored to win the NBA championship and, of course, co-favorites to win the East, Boston and Milwaukee, and the two teams about $2 behind to win the NBA championship, but co-favorites out West, the reigning champs in the Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns. Three of those four teams never amounted to getting anywhere close to those numbers. I mean, the Denver Nuggets did reach the second round and a game seven. But at 29-1, Oklahoma City was tied for the eighth best price to win the Western Conference crown, along with four other teams, including the Timberwolves, who, of course, are favored now to get that done at a minus 168 series price against the Dallas Mavericks. I have to believe the price is less than 10-1. I have to believe for Oklahoma City, the price is in the top five. But depending on how this offseason shakes out, DRS, and we look at L.A., the Lakers and the Clippers, and we see what Golden State brings back, and depending on what happens in Phoenix, if all of the big three do return, I wouldn't be overly shocked to see Oklahoma City not have one of the three or five best prices. Just give it out in the odds makers' view, the NBA season in large part, and this year being unexpected for those young and rising teams to kind of outlast the teams that have more of that postseason pedigree with those superstars that we have known more so in the last decade in the association.
Exactly, and there's a lot of room there. They have a lot of money to spend on the salary cap, and also they have some unbelievable options to flip some draft picks for superstar players, because the one thing you could take a look at in that lineup, I like Isaiah Joe, but he'd be great coming off the bench, being able to fill it up from three-point range. If you improve that shooting guard position here on OKC with a flat-out veteran star, that changes the equation. So you're right about that. We're sort of in a holding pattern, because the one thing I think we can understand about OKC is I don't think they're going to return next year with the same exact team. And why would you? As I said, salary cap to spend, as well as using those extra picks that you can flip, you should be able to get two to three nice pieces in there to make a run. And also, back to the original statement for me, so many times, like, wait a second, who's this SGA guy that's dropping 35 points, but then they won't let him play for three straight games because they need losses. Then they bring him back, he scored 35. That was like 2 to 3 years ago. Now this guy's playing every single night as a legitimate MVP candidate. It's time to surround all those guys with talent. And I think they will. So I would be surprised, again, that 10-1 price be a little bit high. We expect movement here based on a team that's already won the number one seed in the regular season. Let's see what happens in the offseason.
Yeah, DRS, I say I wouldn't be surprised if the odds maker said it. If you were asking me and you and I were in the FanDuel Sportsbook risk room, I would have that price at plus 750, plus 700, because I believe in the Thunder earning that valuable postseason pedigree and an offseason where you would expect for them to add a critical and important piece. I have full belief in the Thunder getting back to the top of the Western Conference next NBA season in 2024-25. Here's one of my favorites from this Guess the Line segment that we're doing, and next segment as well. Nikola Jokic was the preseason favorite to win the 2024 NBA MVP at plus 430. I expect him to be the favorite entering next year. but I don't know what that number necessarily looks like. And I wonder how much the odds makers in a market that is not necessarily quantifiable change that number. Because for Nikola Jokic to win four MVP awards in 5 years, I would think would be rather unfathomable just based on voter fatigue, knowing it is a narrative award. I think the Joker could be the preseason favorite entering next season. I don't think he wins the MVP award next year.
You hit the nail on the head, because it's not so much about him being a great basketball player, which he is, and quite frankly, probably should be the number one overall guy at the start of the odds market at the FanDuel Sportsbook. But there's no, like, how can he win the MVP next year? Because usually, I talk about this all the time in every sport. You got to be an MVP candidate for a couple years before you win the MVP. It's very rare, Ben, you come out of nowhere like, hey, didn't know who this guy was, and he's the MVP. You have to build yourself. It's almost like the all-pro team in the NFL. You got to be an all-pro for like 2 to 3 years before you actually get named all pro. The reason I say this, and you're right about it, by hitting that nail on the head, is Jokic should be the MVP favorite next year, but everybody's coming with the mindset he's not going to win it again. So how low can you put those prices, knowing that everybody else is going to be pegging Luka Doncic a little bit below, SGA or Joel Embiid, or just somebody who didn't win it last year at this point? So I don't think he's going to be as high as that plus 430. I look for an opening price around 5-1, knowing that the voters and also the bettors say he can't win this again.
I'm betting on Luka Doncic. More Guess the Line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Guess the Line continues as we have an outlook for next season and the offseason in the NBA. And we're doing this before the summer months, before free agency, before an NBA year has truly come to a close, with the conference finals beginning tonight in the Eastern Conference in Boston between the Celtics and the Pacers. I say that because of the large caveat. I think that would be tied to the New York Knicks price entering next year. I think it's pretty apparent. For the Knicks to get back to the mountaintop, for the Knicks to make the Eastern Conference finals, for the Knicks to be a true NBA title contender, they need another piece alongside Jalen Brunson. That piece is not Julius Randle, so I wonder what New York does this offseason. A couple of years ago, there was a thought, DRS, that the Knicks were maybe not that attractive destination in the Big Apple that they once had the idea of being. Now I believe New York is. I think there will be a big fish on the line to make their way to Madison Square Garden for next year. So the Knicks entered this season at 16-1 to win the Eastern Conference crown. I believe it was the fifth best price, well behind both Boston and Milwaukee, with Philadelphia and Miami in front of New York as well. What do you think the price is on the New York Knicks entering next season to win the Eastern Conference championship?
Yeah, if we're taking a look at 16-1, you know it's going to be lower than that right off the bat, because the Knicks have a really good organization, a good basketball team, and superstar players like Jalen Brunson. But the fact of the matter is this roster is going to change next year, and also the landscape of the East, I don't know how much it changes from being top-heavy. The reason I say that is the Boston Celtics are going to have a championship-laden team. Granted, most of those players we expect to come back. You also take a look at the Milwaukee Bucks. That was a down ending to the season. Why? Because most likely some of your superstar players got injured, one like Giannis Antetokounmpo. So let's just say he holds the pedal to the metal in Milwaukee, as he's told them repeatedly. I'm not going to stay or be happy unless you give me exactly what I want on a year-to-year basis. They'll be back up there. And also the Philadelphia 76ers looking to add another max contract player along with Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. I think those three teams will be priced ahead of the New York Knicks. But after that, it really should be the New York Knicks, which a 16-1 price in the East should be much lower as the fourth technical seed. So if I'm being honest with myself, probably an 8-9-1 price on the New York Knicks in the East next year to me does make some sense, because they will make changes. And we saw how good they can be with Jalen Brunson. But I honestly believe they'll be seeded fourth in the odds market once we get those numbers from FanDuel.
I think fourth is correct, but I wonder what fourth best is in terms of the number. These notes from our producer, Joe Friso, who tracks the markets very well. I had it incorrect. It was not New York with the fifth best price. It was sixth best. Boston and Milwaukee, super short co-favorites to win the East before the year at plus 175. Third best number was the Cavs at plus 750. Then Philly at 10-1 with the uncertainty around James Harden and his status. And then Miami with the fifth best number at 11-1 and the New York Knicks at a 16-1 price. I think New York is closer to that 10-1 number, but I think Boston will enter next season as a very short favorite to win the East. If Dame and Giannis both return to Milwaukee, which is what we would expect, I think they have the second best number, and I think Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey have been that formidable duo in Philadelphia, third best price. So where exactly are the gaps in terms of those numbers? I do think New York has that fourth best price. Could Donovan Mitchell impact that price for the Knickerbockers? Donovan Mitchell, what team is he going to be on in 2024-25? What would you set the odds on DRS that he returns to your favorite city, Cleveland?
I would probably put that at a plus money price at this point, not actually as a favor. Like, oh, he's coming back minus 300. I just figure that, you know, if you play in Cleveland and you hear the squawking outside and you know you're pretty much doomed from the beginning of the season, where it's all about a lot of times these guys, yes, they want their money. They want to live in a great place, but also they want to have a chance to win a championship. Is anybody talking about next year, a lot of good players going to Cleveland to surround Donovan Mitchell, and away they go? No. So if you see other teams in great destinations with organizations that have won championships, that's going to be much more alluring to him than staying in Cleveland. So I would put the favorite as him leaving Cleveland here at, let's just say, a minus 200 price, as opposed to staying, which I think would be a dog price right now.
I agree. I would say minus 250 for him to go anywhere else in the NBA, probably plus 600 for him to return in Cleveland. I just really think his time in Cleveland has come to a close. I think the Cavaliers are going to undergo some offseason changes to that roster and maybe even the coaching staff and JB Bickerstaff. I don't know where Donovan Mitchell ends up. We heard from JY, he doesn't want him in New York. Maybe it's not with the Knicks. Maybe it's the Brooklyn Nets. Could it be another place? That remains to be seen. But Spida Lakers will be a big-time player to monitor. Lakers make some sense. Hour three comes your way next.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.